Ja, hej och hjärtligt välkomna till Arsenal Göteborgs podcast, en podcast av Arsenal fans till Arsenal fans för Arsenal fans, där det är känslorna som styr. I know that a lot of you are here to listen to Elliot Smith. He's gonna appear later in the podcast, so me and my colleague are gonna do a segment in Swedish first, but if you don't understand Swedish, just fast forward till you hear English again, and then you have it. There we go. Hej Oskar.
Hej Filip.
Hej. Hur är det läget?
Det är fint, hur är det själv?
Ja, vad bra. Jo, det är bra. Vi kanske ska vara lite transparenta och säga så här att det här biten i podcasten hamnar först. Men det är den här biten vi spelar in sist. Så vi har ju redan spelat in med Elliot Smith här i typ en timme och en kvart. Så det här med att jag frågar hur är det, det vet ju jag redan.
Stämmer bra.
Ja, det var lite tokigt med inspelningen för han hade lite brådis, så vi hann inte prata om allt vi tänkte prata om. Så vi missade prata om Olympiakos-matchen vi spelade för typ en vecka sedan. Så ja, vi kan ju bara prata om den lite snabbt nu innan vi liksom bryter och skickar över till när vi pratade med Elliot. Låter det bra?
Låter bra.
Bra. Då har jag gjort så här, i och med att det är en vecka sedan ungefär vi spelade den matchen, så ska vi inte grotta ner så mycket. Utan då har jag som vanligt tagit ut den här 12-3-punkter. Jag älskar det här inslaget, 12-3-punkter. Första punkten som jag tar med mig från den här matchen är fuck Europa-målvakt. Så jäkla gött att satsa på Leno även i Europa League för att visa att vi tar den turneringen på allvar. Vi har pratat om det tidigare säsonger i podden, att jag inte varit något jättestort fan av så här cupmålvakter och Europa League målvakter. Alltså, ja. Spelar man i Europa League eller Champions League eller långt in i FA-cupen, då ska bästa målvakten spela för att då ökar chansen för att vinna. Simplest det. Ja. Any comments?
Nej, men det känns ju som en bra strategi när vi vill gå vidare och ja. Det är ju ändå, Olympiakos är ändå tuff. En tuff bortamatch. Och det verkar ju som att Leno verkligen uppskattar det personligen att han fick stå också. Från vad man har hört i kommentarerna efter matchen. Så att det känns väl som en win-win.
Ja, det tycker jag verkligen, verkligen. Okej, nästa punkt är Auba på högerkanten är helt meningslös. Och om ni lyssnar längre in i podden här så kommer ni höra när jag, Oscar och Elliot praisar Aubameyang till skyarna för att han är så jäkla bra. Men det är ju när han spelar på vänsterkanten. På högerkanten så är han ju, jag vill inte säga värdelös, men inte alls lika bra.
Inte lika mycket världsklass man är i vanliga fall.
Nej, nej. Det är ju det här Iwobi-syndromet. Oh no, he didn't.
Nej, men Aubameyang är en bra spelare till skillnad från Iwobi.
Nej, men det Aubameyang på högerkanten är slöseri med resurser, tycker jag. Kommer inte alls till rätta där. Okej, den tredje punkten från Olympiakos-matchen, bortamatchen vann med 1-0, är att Maitland-Niles verkar inte vara populär hos Arteta. Sokratis går före som högerback och får spela 10 minuter med kramp innan Arteta byter in Maitland-Niles. Maitland-Niles har inte jättehöga aktier hos Arteta, om man säger så.
Började ju bra, men ja, man vet ju inte riktigt vad som har hänt bakom kulisserna. Kanske kan vara så att han har reagerat dåligt på att vi har värvat in en ny högerback. Och sen så är det väl som, det var väl Arsblog som sa i senaste podden där, att han kanske inte har reagerat så, eller som han sa om Saka, att Saka är väldigt villig och vill lära sig att spela vänsterback även om han inte är vänsterback, medan Maitland-Niles tidigare har gnällt på våra högerback.
Och man tycker att han var så hem. Nej, det var så kul för de första matcherna med Arteta så spelade jag Maitland-Niles högerback. Och då var det verkligen så här, mycket snacket var ju så här, vad fan, kommer Bellerin ens ta plats? Kommer Bellerin gå in i Artetas system? För Maitland Niles gjorde det så bra med det här att han går in och spelar in i mitt fält, typ. Och nu, två månader senare, så är Maitland Niles, han är ju inte ens med på träningarna, typ. Så lite han är inblandad.
Så är det, men ja, det finns ju matcher kvar och det är bara att bita ihop och visa vad man kan producera när man får chansen, helt enkelt.
Ja, okej, okay, så var det med det. Du, nu ja. Ska vi nog om Olympiakos, nu ska vi blicka framåt och lämna över ordet till oss själva när vi pratar med Elliot Smith.
Det var 5 snabba så. Minuter om... Knappt 4 snabba minuter om Olympiakos. Så intressant tyckte Filip att men Olympiakos var.
Nej, men jag menar, det är ändå en vecka sedan. Man vill prata om det färskaste. Vi ska inte grotta ner oss för mycket. Vi ska ju snart möta dem igen också. Så vi ska inte
ösla för mycket tid. Utan... Det känns ändå bättre att grotta ner sig efter match nummer 2.
Ja, precis, precis. Så 3 snabba punkter, 4 snabba minuter om Olympiakos borta. Det räcker så. Okej, vi hörs om en stund och då är det på engelska. Håll i hatten. Yes, and hello to Arsenal Gothenburg podcast, a podcast for Arsenal fans, by Arsenal fans, to Arsenal fans, where emotions run the show. This time on in English, not on English, in English. My name is Philip Tolf, and with me today, via Skype, my colleague and friend, Oscar Axelsson. Hello, Oscar, how are you?
Hello, Philip. I'm fine, how are you?
I'm fine. I'm very thrilled about this podcast. I'm going to get right to it, because we have... we have an international guest, which has been a huge, influence to me in this podcast role. I'm talking about Arsenal Visions podcast host, Elliot, a.k.a. Yankee Gunner Smith. Hello, Elliot.
Hey, great to talk to you guys.
How are you this evening for us? For you is today, obviously, since you're in America, but yeah. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad. It's been a pretty brutal winter weather-wise for us, but it's starting to ease up a little bit. I would say that you probably can commiserate a little bit, because most of the people I talk to don't really understand how bad the winter can get, but we get it pretty bad here. So that's starting to ease up. And then obviously I had my second child in December, so she's just over 3 months. Thank you. Yeah, just over 3 months old now. So between the cold and not sleeping, I am ready for spring to roll around.
I have this one thought when we have, you know, guests whose parents and everything. I'm not a parent. Mm-hmm. I have 2 nieces. But I just real quick, I have this thought. What are your opinions about, you know, parentship and Arsenal? Are you going to be the parents that's like, you know, football is fine. You can choose whatever team you want. If you want to support Arsenal, I'm fine. If you want to support... not Spurs, God forbid, but like Everton, that's all right by me. You do your own choice. Or are you going to be the parent like, Arsenal is the only way of life. I'm going to dress you red and white for every day.
I mean, it's so tough, right? Because like the one thing I'm learning being a parent, and I came to parenting later in life, but you don't actually have as much control over the kids as you think you do. Like my older daughter is only 4.5 years old, but already she's far more in charge of things than I am. So while Arsenal will always be the team that's on the television and always be the team that is supported by me in our household, the odds that they will then follow suit are potentially low and certainly not within my control. So yes, I will attempt to steer her towards being an Arsenal fan, even though that might be totally unfair and painful thing to do to her. But whether or not she or her sister follow suit, I doubt I have as much control over that as I might think. So any parent that believes they have the ability to decide for their kids what team they will support, I think is overstating their importance.
All right. So you're just going to be like, you choose whatever you want. I support you either way.
I mean, I'm going to tell her to choose Arsenal. I just don't know if she'll listen to me.
All right. That's true. I said... When I introduce you, you're the host of Arsenal Vision podcast.
Yep.
Just real quick, because we often, you know, talk about your podcast in our podcast, and you know, oh, they say this and that in that podcast. That's so clever. I haven't thought about it. But if someone hasn't listened to your podcast, do you want to say something quick about it?
Yeah, sure. Just we you know, we'd love to have anybody listen. The podcast comes out generally after every match, a day after the match, so we have some time to digest it and not just sort of yell and scream about it emotionally. We have three regular panel members in Tim, Clive, and Paul. And Tim's a season ticket holder. Clive goes fairly regularly, and Paul and I are sort of remote viewers. And then Scott is our analytics correspondent, and he comes on and gives us sort of the data perspective from time to time. You know, we try to look at things as analytically as we can and go through the match in a way where we can discuss the tactics and discuss, you know, what the coach is trying to achieve and what he's building. And then over on the Patreon side or subscriber side, we do some sort of wacky fun stuff, rewatch pods and spotlight players. And the one that we're doing right now that's kind of fun, and you can certainly reach out on Twitter and give me yours. We're picking our best combined Arsenal 11 from the Invincible era, the post-Invincible era, and the post-Ozil era. So you can pick three Invincibles, four from the era between 2007 and 2013, and four from the era since 2013. It's a challenging mission, should you choose to accept it, but we've had a lot of interesting answers. So that's just sort of a flavor of the kind of stuff we try to work on.
Oh, sounds fun. That's a fun game. We should do that another time.
Go for
we
have it.
Loads of other stuff to talk about, but maybe for another time.
I'll tell you what, if you want, I'll tell you mine just really quickly.
Of course.
Yeah. Because it'll give you an idea of the challenge, right? So Thierry Henry, I've already said, he's my favorite player of all time. Didn't make my team, but I went with Leno in goal. I went with Sanya, Koscielny, Saul Campbell, and Ashley Cole. I went with Vieira, Cesc Fabregas, and Santi Cazorla in midfield, and Van Persie, Alexis, and Aubameyang up front. So when you try to put it together, I know you're going to want Henry in there. You're going to want Bergkamp in there. You have to decide, are you dropping Vieira? Are you dropping Saul Campbell? It's not as easy as you might think.
Yeah. Sounds like a good 11, though.
Yeah, they could win.
I bet they could. About your podcast. Now we're going to talk a little about time about you, since, you know, if not everyone listens to your podcast, they don't know you as an Arsenal fan, I was about to say Arsenal player. That would be fun, an Arsenal fan. So we're going to give you our introduction question, which, you know, is for our listeners to get to know you better, and maybe for us as well as an Arsenal fan. Oscar, would you like to start?
Yeah, get the best question. What's your name?
Elliot Smith.
So I said right. Elliot Smith. I got that right.
Yep. That's correct. Yeah, and, yes. And not the musician, yes, who unfortunately met with an ill-timed demise. So sometimes confused between the two.
All right. Well, I got that right. That's good. Mm-hmm. Next question. How, when, and why did you become an Arsenal supporter?
Yeah, so the how ties into the when and the why, I guess, all of them. So basically, I had a job that involved me going to London for work quite regularly in 98, 99, 2000, 2001. And a little bit into 2002. So I was traveling to London a lot, and it was at a time when football was starting to be able to be consumed in the U.S., but, you know, not as easily, obviously, as it is right now. So I was sort of interested in it. You know, I had followed it in the World Cup years, obviously, and I was sort of curious about becoming a football supporter. And you know, when I was traveling over there, obviously, football was rabidly followed, and there was a lot of support and a lot of enthusiasm for it. So I was like, you know what, I kind of want to get into this. I kind of want to get interested in it. And actually, ironically, I was over there in the spring of 1998, and Arsenal were in the FA Cup final against Newcastle. And so some of the people from work took me out to a pub to watch the game, and just the enthusiasm, the energy, and the excitement, and the way people supported the team was just so electrifying to me. So I said, you know what? I think I'll just pick this team, Arsenal, and be a fan of theirs. And it's pretty good timing because obviously Arsene Wenger had just arrived and there were titles, FA Cup and league titles on the horizon. So really the how, when, and why are all tied together. It was 1998 because I was working in London, and the why is because I watched them win the FA Cup final. So that's really the origin story. It would be several more years of me sort of being able to watch them on and off before I was really hooked, but that was the start of it.
All right. Great answer. Next question, Oscar.
Yep. Next question is, who's your favorite player now and who's your favorite player through all of your years supporting Arsenal? And I think you already answered one of them, those questions, but go again.
I think what I'll do, I'll pivot. So my favorite player now is Aubameyang. I adore him. I always admired him when he was at Dortmund. He was a player I always wanted at Arsenal. I'm sad that we got him as late in his career as we did. Not that he's suffered any for it. But yeah, I love Aubameyang. And I think I love him all the more because I was not a fan of Olivier Giroud. And so, you know, I really wanted that pace and explosiveness and golden boot caliber striker up front again. And so getting Aubameyang sort of ticked all those boxes for me. And then I know I said Thierry Henry is my sort of all-time favorite Arsenal player, but I have another one that runs him close. And it's Cesc Fabregas, right? Because for me, you know, in a way, I felt like I was borrowing Thierry Henry as a fan, in the sense that I had come to Arsenal fandom kind of around the time that he had arrived. But, you know, really when I started blogging about Arsenal, when I started writing and recording and doing other sort of content about Arsenal, Henry was, you know, about to leave. And the player that was sort of coming through and becoming a star at Arsenal at the period where I was really getting closer to the club and interacting with the club on a day-to-day basis was Fabregas. So Henry is by far my favorite player, just in terms of the enjoyment I got watching him. But the one that I feel maybe the most connected to emotionally and intertwined with in terms of sort of my journey of getting closer to the club and that coinciding with his period of prominence would be Fabregas.
Great. And you talked about Aubameyang. We're going to have reasons to come back to him, but not now. It's later on in this podcast. Yeah. Next question. This question is a Swedish expression which is called rise and roast, which rise is one bad thing, roast is a good thing. So basically, one bad thing about Arsenal in general, and you know, the greatest thing about Arsenal in general, in your opinion, though.
The greatest thing and the worst thing about Arsenal?
Exactly, what you think. Like, the greatest thing, we sold Giroud, woo! Like,
yeah, well, that is the worst. Great, yeah. yeah, okay, so this is tough, right? Because, like, obviously there's the tendency to want to give the, you know, the cliche answer, oh, the greatest thing is the community of friends I've made and the supporters and how great they are. And I mean, that is true, but I feel like it's cliche. I mean, yes, the greatest thing for Arsenal for me has been the way it has changed my life entirely, because prior to writing about Arsenal and recording about Arsenal, you know, I didn't have a hobby. I didn't have a pastime, a thing that engaged me and excited me and enriched me in the way that I do now. But that's sort of a thing that's good for me. I mean, in terms of why Arsenal, you know, I think I have to go back and just say Arsene Wenger's class both on and off the pitch, because, you know, there is something to be said for how Arsenal is thought of. And maybe it hasn't been this way for many years, but it's still, you know, when Arsene Wenger took over, it was 1-0 to the Arsenal. It was George Graham. It was defensive football. And the way he transformed us into a global brand of beautiful, attractive, attacking football that also coincided with his erudition and articulation, his ability to communicate his philosophy and his ideas in a way that was aspirational. I think for me, the best thing about Arsenal is that sort of aspirational, philosophically elevated approach to football and ideology, the Arsenal way. I mean, I know that predates Arsene Wenger, but the Arsenal way, I think, has also now come to embody his philosophy about football. And it's why I think Emery was not embraced, results aside, and why I think Arteta is being embraced. So for me, it is the Arsenal way. It is a philosophy of beautiful attacking football and doing things the right way. And then, you know, maybe the worst thing about Arsenal is just, I hate to pick on him, but I think the fact that right now the schism between the fans, the community, and the ownership, you know, it is ultimately the history of football in England is especially about communities and about being a local organization. And Arsenal was obviously fan owned at some level, and it was a community organization. And when Stan finished buying out the balance of the club, it's become, you know, a corporate holding, a piece of a portfolio of sports holdings. And so there has been that disconnect, I think. And for people that have loved the club for a long time and for whom it has been a part of their life, not just from an entertainment level, but from a community institution level, I think that's damaging. And I think we all feel the effect of that, even global fans. So, you know, it's not a reason to stop loving Arsenal, but it's the thing that I think is probably the part about Arsenal right now that's the most unfortunate.
Yeah. We often get that answer during the, you know, rise question, the worst part. So, yeah. A lot of people think the same about these issues, so to speak. The last question in our introduction question is, Oscar, are you ready?
Yes. Are you a member of Arsenal Gothenburg? I think I can guess the answer.
I am not an Arsenal Gothenburg member, unfortunately. I'm happy to be one if you just instruct me how to do so.
Great. Oscar, can you instruct Elliot and our listeners how to do so?
The easiest way is to visit arsenalgothenburg.se, and there you will find the information both in Swedish and in English on how to become a member. I don't think we should delve into the more specifics than that.
I guess that's the easiest way to do it. So, Elliot, after our recording, go to arsenalgothenburg.se and read all about it.
Can do, yes.
All right? Great. So, we're going to talk a little bit about our win against Everton. Arsenal 3, Everton 2. And I think we're going to start with the lineup, like we usually do. I say the lineup, and then I'm going to pass the question to you, Elliot, your thoughts when you read it for the first time, your thoughts in hindsight, and so on. Leno in goal, Bellerin, Mustafi, David Luiz, Kolasinac, our defenders. Two holding midfielders, Ceballos, Xhaka, Pepe, Özil, Aubameyang, and our number nine, so to speak, for the night was Eddie Nketiah. Your thoughts on the 11, Elliot?
Yeah, I mean, okay, so look, I don't rate Kolasinac, but I understood the decision to select him because I think as much as we love Saka, we have to remember he is 18, and playing an 18-year-old every 2 days, I think is incredibly, not every 2 days, twice a week, you know, every three days, every 4 days, is incredibly risky. So, you know, I felt that it was right to rest Saka. And I think we saw in the second half that he probably needed the rest. I thought he looked shattered in the second half and really struggled with the pace of the game through no fault of his own. He's a young player, and young players need to be managed in terms of their minutes. You know, I think the fact that Kolasinac wasn't any good doesn't make the decision to rotate Saka out any less correct. And ultimately, it wound up being undone by the injury to any extent anyway. The other one was Nketiah. Now, look.
Yeah,
I think, you know, when you put your opinions out there, you have to be willing to stand behind them, but also acknowledge when, you know, you wind up being wrong. I was not happy about Nketiah being picked up front. And my reason for it is sort of simple, which is I don't see him as necessarily being a Lacazette type player in the sense that I don't know that he's as good dropping in, building play, being a target man, holding the ball up and distributing. I think he is more of a penalty box striker, more of a guy who gets on the end of moves. And indeed, we saw him get on the end of move and score a goal, which made it all worthwhile. Having said that, in my mind, I feel that if you're not going to start Lacazette and you are going to start Aubameyang, I'd just rather see Aubameyang play at center forward. And then you could put Martinelli in on the wing, you know, or something like that. And then we have not seen Aubameyang get a chance to start up front for Arteta. But the irony, of course, is that Aubameyang winds up being man of the match and getting two goals, and Nketiah gets a goal. So my opinions are crap, and you don't have to listen to me. The other thing I would say is I think Martinelli is an elite center forward prospect.
Yeah.
I think that where he will ultimately make his mark and wind up playing for Arsenal and indeed wherever he moves on from there will be center forward. And so he would be in the pecking order above Nketiah for me at striker. So if you're absolutely hell-bent on playing Aubameyang out wide and you don't want to play Lacazette, personally, I'd rather Martinelli get the start ahead in Nketiah. But as I said, look, it is a results business. And when a coach gets it right from a results standpoint, there's not a lot of point in going back and trying to explain why it was still wrong from a process standpoint. Nketiah did what he had to. He got a goal, an important goal, the equalizer to get us back in the game. Aubameyang thrived in that inside left position. So, you know, mission accomplished. As far as all that goes, it's not necessarily the selection I would have preferred, but it was a selection that worked.
I have a theory I want to run by you.
Please, yeah.
Speaking about Nketiah and Aubameyang, we talked about it in our last podcast, which I'm sure you're listening to, obviously.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yep. About Aubameyang and Nketiah, I have this theory that Arteta wants, I don't know how to say this, but he wants two players for one position.
Yeah.
His top striker, Lacazette, and Nketiah, because he think like, you two are going to do this job. And for the left flank, he wants Aubameyang, and mainly Aubameyang and Martinelli, because he wants those two to be like the inside forward. You know what I mean? You don't want to mix them all about, like Martinelli, top striker this evening. Next match is going to just play out wide. I think Arteta has that thought, like I said, Nketiah, I'm going to rotate you two to not mix it up too much. And on the left, I'm going to rotate Martinelli and Aubameyang. So you two know that role, and you two know that role. You know what I mean?
Mm. Yeah, well, so I agree. Look, I agree with you, right? I mean, I think that's clearly the case. But like, the question becomes, what is the best personnel grouping to achieve that? Do you see what I'm saying? I mean, it's not that I disagree with you. I think what we've clearly done with overloading the left side is we've been able to push Aubameyang inside to be able to run the channels. You know, you saw him make that channel run, that half space run to score his goal, right? And
beautiful goal.
A beautiful goal, Thierry Henry goal. And the striker is dropping in and building play a little more and then trying to run in behind in the second phase of play. Pepe a little more isolated. So it's just that I think we sometimes think of players according to attributes that they don't necessarily have. You know, there's this perception that, oh, Lacazette's playing the Firmino role. You know, he's a good hold-up player, good distributor. I don't know that he is that player. I think in his career, what he showed is he's a penalty box striker. He's a finisher. That's who he is. The fact that he's played that way has caused us to sort of assume that he's the former, when I think he's actually the latter. And there's a presumption that, you know, Aubameyang runs in behind, so he's not a player who can do what we're asking our striker to do. But I don't know that we have an elite, you know, we don't have an Olivier Giroud, thank goodness. Just kidding. But, you know, we don't have a guy who's a back-to-goal striker by his definition, his nature. We don't have a Firmino. We don't have anyone at that caliber of distribution. So I think whoever plays the nine in that role is doing something a little outside their comfort zone. Now, here's the irony. A lot of people would say, oh, well, you know, it doesn't perfectly fit Aubameyang to play the nine the way we're playing it. Well, I'd argue that it doesn't perfectly suit him to be defending, you know, the wing back at the, you know, in his own defensive third and chasing the length of the pitch to cover wingers and fullbacks, but he's doing that too. So while I agree with your theory about what the roles are, I still think Aubameyang could be given the center forward role, at least to see how he handles it, given that he's shown he's willing to put in the work to handle this sort of left-sided striker role that forces him to cover a lot of the pitch.
Yeah, because it covers a lot of ground. I don't know if you guys thought about it, but Aubameyang mostly play left back more than Saka does. He's further down the board.
Oh yeah, of course. Yeah. I mean, because Saka's playing more like a wing back or a forward, and that's part of that is Xhaka dropping in as well, right, to provide a little bit of cover. Which is why I think it's funny when people say, "Oh, you know, Saka could develop into a world class fullback." It's not that he couldn't. I mean, sure he could, but he's not playing as a fullback now. I think it is wrong to suggest that the role, he may be listed on the team sheet as a fullback, but look at his touch maps, his pass maps, where he's playing, where he's positioned, his average position. He's not playing as a fullback, you know?
No, totally, totally. I think Lee Dixon talked about it also on this Handbrake Off, the podcast.
Yep, good podcast.
He said that, great pod. He said that, like, if you put Saka on a basic back four, so to speak, and would be the left back, he wouldn't stand a chance. But now he's going up so much and got protection, you know, from Xhaka and Aubameyang, so he looks like a good fullback, but probably he isn't. Moving on a bit, Oscar, I thought I'm going to give you the word, and you're going to talk about a little bit about Kolasinac's defending in Everton's 1-0 goal. Not only Kolasinac, but he was a big part of it, I think, when he, like, instead of defending the line, had a wrestling. Oh, you like boxing, by the way. Had a boxing match with, I forget who it was, but looks kind of funny. What do you think, Oscar?
To be honest, it was so bad I haven't rewatched it a single time. So I'm not sure. I just sat down when it happened and I haven't rewatched it a single time since. And I think that's kind of a part of me that it was so bad that I didn't want to rewatch it. So I don't know if I probably won't be able to give you a good answer on what he's doing, but he hasn't played for a while, and I can't say I feel sorry for him getting injured when he's making his first appearance back again. I mean, it's understandable that it takes a while to get in shape again and get those minutes under your belt, and then to injure yourself in your first game. I also thought it was wise to let him start, even if I don't think he has a future at Arsenal. But I wouldn't say that I have too much to add on his bad defending.
That's a great picture on Twitter, by the way. He said, like, okay, David Luiz said, here's our defense line. And Kolasinac said, yeah, great, I'm just going to go down here and wrestle for a bit.
Yeah. I don't know what he was doing there.
I do have something to say about it, Elliot, or just...
Look, you don't want to beat up on a guy who's now clearly injured, who has been in and out of the team, mostly out of the team. I think the fact remains that Kolasinac was never really a fullback. He was a wingback. He's not particularly technically adept. I don't think he keeps his head up enough in the final third. I think he's a very poor defender one-on-one. But all of that having been said, I have no idea what he's doing on that set piece, because there's just no reason for him to go with the man there. There's just none, no reason whatsoever. So, you know, I think more than anything, he's a player who maybe isn't the most intelligent on the pitch. You know, I don't know that he has the most sort of tactical intelligence and awareness. And you see how important that is, especially on set pieces, because that's when the whole unit has to function together sort of symbiotically. And he clearly was just doing his own thing there. I think his brain switched off and he just went with the man. I can't explain it. He's not a player I have a lot of time for, candidly. And, you know, as was said by Oscar, I don't think his future is at Arsenal.
We got 1-0 down. And something that I thought of recently is the new character in Arsenal. Like, going back a couple of months, you know, in the Emery era, so to speak, when we went 1-0 down, the whole team went to pieces, basically. But here we are, 1-0 down. It's just 1 minute, so we got a whole game ahead of us. But 1-0 down, and everyone was like, oh, come on, next gear, we're going to fucking do this, Everton team. I don't know what it is. It's not a question. I just want to say it. I love this new mentality, which Arteta has... brought, can you say that?
You know why I think going 1-0 down was a problem for Emery is that I think tactically speaking, he did not have any understanding of how to build a platform for attack that didn't totally expose us defensively. So either we were playing too conservatively and had no attacking threat, or we were trying to get back in a game and we were far too easy to cut apart. I think Arteta has implemented a system that gives us a sort of structural integrity, a compactness, an organization that makes us a little harder to just open up. So when we have to try to have a little more of the ball and try to have a little more of the ball in the attacking third and create a few more chances, we're not leaving ourselves totally exposed to being caught for a second, for a third, and so on. Now, I mean, to be fair, they had a lot of chances second half, and I think that's more down to fatigue than it is anything tactical. I think the team looked tired in the second half. Fair enough. We played a tough away game in Europe on Thursday, and Everton were fresh. They hadn't played for a couple weeks. So yeah, I think in general, what I like about Arteta's system, I still think he's trying to figure out how to tweak the attack to get it to be as effective as it can be. But this system that he's implemented and the structure and the organization that we have, I think is a great platform, because when we go forward, we aren't, by virtue of going forward, leaving ourselves imbalanced and exposed at the other end. So there's a good balance about it. Now I think he just has to tweak it so that the attack can click a little more frequently. And to be fair, between the Newcastle game and the Everton game, we saw some flashes that maybe the attack is starting to click.
When you say tweak the attack, do you mean give the ball to Bakayo Saka and he will provide an assist? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, I mean, just always give it to Saka and always have him do whatever he wants. Yeah, I mean, one of the things that I think he can do, look, clearly we overload left. Saka overlaps, Aubameyang gets pushed into the box. Then we have the center forward attacking the central zone. We have Pepe sort of attacking that right half space zone, but we don't have anyone on the right wing. Bellerin is not overlapping. Sometimes Ozil drifts out and goes there, and sometimes Bellerin overlaps. But I think pretty clearly what Arteta is preaching right now is for Bellerin to tuck inside and stay a little deeper and Saka to overlap. And that is the shape. And so, you know, a lot of the big clubs right now are attacking in sort of a 2-3-5 formation. We are doing it in more of a 2-4-4, I guess you would say. And maybe that's just with an eye towards being a little less vulnerable defensively because he doesn't trust the defensive organization or talent level, whatever the case may be. We saw it against Newcastle a little bit when we turned on, you know, when we turned on the style a bit. He's able to tweak that by having Bellerin overlap and getting more of those five attackers into the channels and letting Ozil play between the lines. And then you have Saka on the left wing, Aubameyang in the half space, Lacazette or Nketiah or whoever it is in the central space, Pepe in the half space, and Bellerin on the right wing. And when you do that, with Ozil sort of in between the lines, pulling the strings, then I think you have a really devastating attack. Naturally, it's going to be a little more vulnerable, but he can add that wrinkle to it to make it more attacking. And I think sort of picking our spots and choosing our spots to alternate the overlapping a little bit so it's not so one-dimensional. Because at the moment, you know, it is a bit one-dimensional. I think the person who suffers is Pepe. He did have another assist in this game, but because he doesn't have the player overlapping him on the right, he tends to be isolated against a double team more often. And maybe Arteta trusts him with his dribbling to beat that double team. But I think if we alternate our overloads and let the fullbacks swap their overlapping duties, then I think the attack can get a little more varied and a little more effective.
Yeah. We did score during an overlap by Saka. Oscar, do you have something to say about Nketiah's goal?
What can you say? It's a good youth combination. A brilliant, brilliant assist by Saka, and also a very good run from Nketiah, where he shows some of his strengths, being in the right place on the right time. I think Ian Wright has spoken about that, his mentoring with Eddie Nketiah on their talks. Do you think he was calling Ian Wright?
I think he was getting on his phone and put on the song Started from the Hayland, Now We're Here.
I like it.
I don't know, maybe. Yeah, thank you very much.
You saw what Saka said, I think it was an Instagram, by the way, though, right? He said, now I've got your number saved, Eddie. So we can expect a lot more.
I did say that.
Yeah, I think we can expect a lot more assists from Saka to Nketiah now.
Yeah, that's
and
good.
I would love that, the Hayland combination. It's fucking lovely. That was 1-1. 2-1, Elliot. We talked a little bit earlier about it, but your favorite, Aubameyang, gets a nice through ball, really nice through ball by David Luiz. Do you have something to say to fill in?
Yeah, I mean, two things there. One, just the run from Aubameyang. He does that thing that good strikers do, two runs, one for the defender and one for himself. So the first run is towards the defender, angled at him, makes it really tough for the defender to react because Aubameyang is sort of running towards him. And then the second run is in behind him. And that keeps him onside, freezes the defender, and gives Luiz all the space in the world to pass it into. And the finish is Thierry Henry just passes it in the net. I mean, for a player who we sort of criticized early on when he arrived for missing too many chances, he certainly has not been missing this season. If anything, we should be worried about how much he's outperforming his expected goals right now, because it suggests that maybe he's on too hot a finishing streak and that he could regress if we don't get him more chances. But the other thing I want to talk about with that move is, even though it's Luiz who plays the killer ball and it's from relatively deep, the period of play leading up to that is tremendous one-touch passing and intricate passing and movement to play out from the press. And if there's one thing that was diabolical under Emery, we were incredibly vulnerable to the press, easy to press, easy to win the ball off of, and those transitions and errors were often where we conceded. And so to see us handling pressure that way, moving the ball quickly, pinging it back and forth, getting around the press, and then using that to suck the defense in. Because this is why you play out from the back. Why people say, why play out from the back? Why not kick long? Well, one, you keep possession, which is important. I mean, we never keep possession when we kick long. But two, what does playing out from the back do? It draws the team onto you. It pulls that team out of their defensive third towards the halfway line. It expands the space in behind the defense for players like Aubameyang to make those runs. But for it to work, you can't lose the ball cheaply. You've got to move it quickly. And then when the space opens up, you've got to make the run in the pass. And it is the way we played through the press that ultimately gives us the opportunity to play Aubameyang in behind. And I think it's tremendous to see it because it was a huge Achilles heel for us before Arteta arrived.
It's a really good point. Like Arsenal play football again. This is the Arsenal we all fall in love in, basically. And we play football again. It's really lovely to see. Unfortunately, I'm going to stick with you, Elliot. We let in another goal just before half time. I don't know. Can you blame Emery? Or is it? I've seen the replay of this goal today two times, and I personally think, like, I don't want to get too much stick to Leno, but what do you think?
I don't see it as being Leno's error. I mean, I think lost in the mess of that goal is Luiz, who I thought had a poor game by his standards defensively, by his Arteta standards. I think he failed to track some Calvert-Lewin runs. I think he was playing a little deeper, which is something Clive on our podcast has identified as a problem. When he's not on his game, he sits too deep. He lets himself get sucked too deep. He plays everyone onside. If he just is on his toes and steps out quicker, that move is offside. I think Leno had a brilliant game. I think he's one of the men of the match, and I'm not going to criticize him there. I think that's a tough situation to react to, and I think if Luiz just steps up, it's offside.
Yeah, so not too much stick for Leno, right?
No, not for me.
No, great. I agree. What do you think, Oscar? Arteta said in halftime, was it like, give the ball to Aubameyang, he does his thing, and then we'll let Leno do his thing, and then we're fine. We're fine.
I think he would have said that we are actually the better team. We've been playing better than them. Just go out and show that you keep on doing what you've been doing, and just play safer at the back, because we obviously, even in the first half, we've been the better team. So I think to lend an Arsene Wenger quote, go out and express yourself. No, I don't. I have no idea what he said, but.
Could be something like that, though.
No, but probably just to keep on doing what they've done in the first half. Maybe telling Aubameyang to get more into the box, like he did in the second half against Newcastle as well. But it's
Elliot, what do you? Sorry.
Sorry. Yeah. What was
it? Yeah. Elliot, what do you think Ancelotti thought when he saw Aubameyang scoring 3-2? I know his face is. It can read a lot into his face then when he just sits and, what the hell?
Yeah, I mean, I gotta tell you, I don't know where this comes from, but Aubameyang scoring two-headed goals, in two games is pretty wild, or two league games is pretty wild. I mean, I think he had one ever prior to that, so. Yeah, I don't know if it's the quality of Pepe's deliveries. I mean, I certainly would say the Newcastle one was a little lofted, and he just made the most out of it. This one was a little bit better, but. You know, I do wonder if there's something to this. I mean, if this is something they're working on, because I don't think you expect Aubameyang to score goals. Headed chances are a much lower XG value to begin with. But for me, you know, I think the reaction may just be the sort of shock at a second game of Aubameyang scoring with his head, because it's extremely rare.
So that's Ancelotti's face. What? He has two goals with his head now? What the hell is going on?
Yeah, I mean, because it's the one thing you think, you know, we're big and strong at the back. I mean, they have what? They have Firmino, who's an absolute tower of a man, a dominant aerial threat. And you're going to let Aubameyang score with his head for only the third time ever? I mean, yeah, I think that could be the frustration.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, you're spot on, actually. I think so. Later the second half, Elliot, you talked a little bit about it earlier. I don't know what it is, but Everton got a hand of us, so to speak. They were a better team. Thank God for Bernd Leno, I have to say. He made some amazing saves this game again. Is this just a factor of us playing three games in what was it 7 days?
Yeah.
And Everton just had 2 weeks off, basically.
I think it's two things. I think it's partly that. There's no question it's that in part. I mean, you could see the fatigue that Saka had. I thought that our energy levels dropped. Look, one of the things they did really well in the second half is they hit the long ball into their left, our right, down our right defensive third to Richarlison, who's an excellent player, and he delivered the ball really nicely to Calvert-Lewin on a number of occasions, and it was way too easy for them to do. But I think there are two points to be noted about that. One is, if you look at the Burnley game, a lot of the analysis around the Burnley game, Adrian Clark does the breakdown for Arsenal.com, and it's fantastic. And he identified that, we didn't do a good enough job closing down the long ball, closing down the delivery up front. I think as our energy waned in the second half, we gave them too much room to hit that long ball into Richarlison. So we made the delivery easier. And then the one thing about this system, Bellerin tucks inside a little bit. He's got Mustafian behind him. We overload left, so we have more bodies on the left side. There is going to be a vulnerability in the right defensive third. And maybe that's by design because the expectation is Bellerin's pace will make up for it and that he's the stronger defender of the two wings. But he's not at full pace yet, and he's not at his best yet. And so, you're hitting it into a space behind a player who's still coming back from a long-term injury. I think Ancelotti is a very smart coach, obviously. I think the combination of our flagging energy levels and maybe a slight system vulnerability was something that Everton were effective in taking advantage of. And it's good because it gives something on tape for Arteta to look at and see if there's a hole in the system there that he needs to patch up.
Oscar, do you have any thoughts about the second half?
No, well, I think we covered the most of it. It's clear that Everton are more rested than us. Also, it's an away trip in Europe, and it's an interesting take on it that we stayed the night in Greece and went home on Friday. That's a new thing. Interesting take of events from Arteta to not fly home straight after the game. Seems reasonable, if you ask me.
Yeah.
And do the light recovery session in Greece instead of flying home late and everything about that. But like you said, Leno really saved us. A bit hairy the moment where he went out and kicked the ball. But
That was beautiful.
That was beautiful. It wouldn't have been beautiful if he'd been more Chesney.
Yeah, that when he came all the way out of his area to do that, I thought that was great. And I mean, that's one of those things where when it comes off, it looks great, and if it doesn't, you look like a complete fool. So you've got to get it right, and he got it spot on.
Yeah. I think we're gonna move on because Elliot, I know that you need to go soon. So we're gonna end up with our favorite segment, which is cool. Player of the Season, where the guest, which is you tonight, Elliot, is going to give points to the three Arsenal players you thought were best against Everton. The player you thought was our third best, you give 1 point. Second best, 2 points. And the best Arsenal player, basically, you give 3 points with a little motivation. And this point goes to a table. And in May, we'll see which player who has been Arsenal's player of the season. So far, Leno is number one, Aubameyang is number two, and Mattia Guendouzi is number three. Maybe this is going to change now. You're all right with the rules? You understand everything?
Yeah, absolutely.
Great. Start with your one-pointer, so to speak.
Yeah, so this is tricky because I think there were a lot of decent performances, but the second half was generally pretty poor. So I think the one-point performance, I think, in a game where, other than the next two I'm going to discuss, there wasn't another real standout dominant performance, I'll just give it to the guy who scored one of the goals. So I'll say Eddie Nketiah gets the one-point performance.
Great. I think, yeah, that's his first point in this little competition.
Makes sense, yeah.
Yeah. Perfect. Great. Two-pointer.
It's got to be Leno for me. Look, as much as I like a lot of the things we did going forward, it was arguably our weakest defensive performance under Arteta in some ways. And, you could say Leno made an error, but, we pointed out one big moment where he came out of his box. He had a lot of big saves. There's one that he made, I think, on Calvert-Lewin point blank off his right arm, right shoulder, where I don't think it registered as being as big a save as it was because I think there was a suspicion of offside, but he wasn't offside. So I think people just assumed the flag was going to go up, and that caused people not to necessarily identify it. But it was a monster save. I thought he had a great game, and he would be my two-point player.
I agree. And I'm going to stop you there because I think I know your third, your third-point player is, or your three-point player is. And I'm going to tell you a little story about when I watched the game. I watched the game with a friend of mine, Eric. And we always do this game. And I said my top three. I said Leno, 3 points. I said, I think I said Mustafi, 2 points. And Özil, 1 point. And he looked at me and said, Philip, are you mad? You didn't give Aubameyang any points. So, Elliot Smith, are you mad or are you going to give Aubameyang any points?
No, I mean, I don't think, unless you were being paid by those players to not give Aubameyang points, I'm going to give Aubameyang all the points. And I'd give him 5 points if I could. And it's not just because he scored 2 goals, the winning goal, a stunning Thierry Henry style goal. This was a captain's performance from him. He was everywhere. I think if you took everything he did in the attacking half out of his performance and only looked at what he did in the defensive third, he'd still be a candidate point because I thought he did such a good job covering that left flank for Saka, who was shattered in the second half. I think he was really heroic. And for a guy who plays every single game, every single minute, never gets subbed off, he really is a phenomenon, and I can't say how impressed I am by him generally and how impressed I was with his performance in this game. He won it for us.
Yeah, he's a real monster, isn't he? Before we're going to let you go, just some quick thoughts about our next game against Olympiacos. It's in about 23 hours. So do you have any wishes or requests or any thoughts about it, so to speak?
Yeah, I mean, the funny thing is, ordinarily I would have been saying, let's rotate and hope for the best because we would have had Manchester City away at the weekend, and the league still looks like it may have something to offer us, especially if their ban is held up. But now, with that being postponed and it being Portsmouth on Monday in the FA Cup, where I think we can definitely rotate, I'm fine with him picking a pretty strong side just to make sure we don't make this tricky for ourselves. You let in the first goal to them in this game, and suddenly it's super nervous. I would say, put out a strong side, put them to the sword early, create chances, sub out your big players in the second half, and just make it a stroll. Because with Portsmouth on Monday, he's got an absolute free pass here to tee up another really strong squad, go out, hammer them, and continue the momentum.
Great. Oscar, do you have any thoughts about Olympiacos tomorrow?
No, go with the strong team, get it done, hope for a good draw. That's the
not too far away, so maybe we can go on a trip. Woohoo!
Yeah, that would be good.
Yeah. Elliot, thank you very much for being guest in our podcast. And like we talked about in the beginning, if you liked Elliot, which I hope you did, you can listen to him after every Arsenal game on Arsenal Vision post-match podcast. And you should block him on Twitter at Yankee Gunner. That's right.
Block me on Twitter, Yankee Gunner. Best idea you've had all day.
Thank you very much, Elliot.
Thanks, guys. Yeah, I really appreciated it.
Yeah, see you around.
Cheers.
Cheers. That was Elliot Smith again from Arsenal Vision Podcast. You can follow him at Yankee Gunner on Twitter. And Oscar, thank you very much for being here with me as well.
Thank you.
And if you want to, you can follow Oscar on Twitter at Oscar with three R's 93, right?
That's correct.
Yeah, and if they want to follow Arsenal Gothenburg on Twitter, how should they do then?
Search for Arsenal GBG.
That's true, that's true. So we're going to
wrap
cut
up.
It quits here, wrap up, so to speak. Oscar, thank you very much.
Thank you, Philip. Speak to you soon.
Speak to you soon. And thank you, everyone, for listening. Speak to you soon. Thank you for listening. Oh, to be a gooner.